Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is the 24th of June 2002 in the location of Koinonia Fireside. And this evening our presenter is Diane Shiner. And today's session is SHD 2002-03, and it's titled Director's Forum Number 3, Vision and Future of Holden. Let's listen in.
Similar to what we did before, except with the addition of the board.
We thought if there would be other people, it was kind of encouraged if the board could be listening.
Oh yeah.
If there are comments, questions, that would be helpful to hear.
I talked to Jim Husagen today about the policies. You know, the whole list of policy.
Oh yes.
He said he doesn't think we have to worry about how to handle them. He said most of them he would not identify as policy.
Right.
So that, he said, just look through the last few years, pick out the ones, put into a record of these are what we should be following. And we don't have to worry about.
So sort of consider them all kind of defunct or something?
Yeah.
Because I think then what we should do is affirm the ones brought forward. You know, maybe in the November meeting or something.
Yeah.
Just so everybody's on the same page.
And I have found, you know, copies of other like last year it was the art.
Looking up at the sky.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which there's not a copy.
I think there's a sign there that
sometimes it's
a
response
to, and I don't know how to pronounce it. It's like SWAK. It's up that one.
And I got some other papers. That whole box of papers
Somebody had shown me that, so it was in your pocket.
Oh, in the cloud.
Yeah.
Was across the Columbia River, and there are valleys over there, and there was a valley like this that was in shadow.
Certainly, and certainly, so that Welcome back.
Try and get started this evening on the forum about visions and dreams for Holden Village. My name is David Christian. I've been a member of the Holden Village Board for 6 years. I've served as the chairperson of the board for the last 2 years. In the course of my work on the board, I have nothing better to do, so I look at and read old minutes from board meetings past. And I really did that this winter. I kind of skimmed through a collection of old minutes. And one thing that became clear to me as I did that is that over the 40 years of Poland's history, there have been many groups that have had conversations about what this place ought to be. Certainly there was a lot of that in the opening years when the founders came and they had this facility and would ask the question, what do we do with it? But that question, what comes next, continues to arise both within the board and within different elements of the Holden community. It has for years. If this were a laboratory situation and we wanted to make a plan for Holden's future, or if we were figuring out the mine remediation, what you'd do is have a nice long period for study, reflection, coming up with another draft, and that would drag on for another few years, and then finally you'd start to do something and check and go on. The mine remediation project that started in 94?
97.
They started the research, and now 5 years later the draft feasibility study is out, and you know, work may begin in 2 or 3 or 4 years. But the Holden community is not a laboratory situation like that where everything lines up in a linear fashion like that. What has gone on in the Holden community for the last 3 years, for the last 2 years, is three distinct, forward-looking processes. Three different processes talking about what does the future hold for Holden. Our hope for tonight is to have a brief summary of each of those processes. The theory is that those processes inform each other. In reality, they do most of the time. There are places where they're not absolutely in step. We wanted to have all the players in one room tonight so that we could understand some of the directions, the hopes and dreams for the village, and to field questions from you about your concerns, what sounds particularly interesting. They said this, but this process said that. What's the conflict? We're not going to come up with any solutions tonight, but it will help us in our continuing board deliberations tomorrow to have reaction and responses from the audience a little bit later. I'll begin just by telling you a little bit about the vision process that the board has undertaken the last 2 years. We worked with a facilitator about a year and a half ago in a two-day meeting that we had in the SeaTac area. And out of that came a list of 10 priorities. As we got through that, we did discover that much of what we did was we described Holden as we knew it, that it really wasn't that much forward-looking. We took those things that we loved the most and identified those, but really didn't push forward from there. Since that time, we've had continuing conversation, some of it face-to-face in board meetings, some of it by email. And this spring came up with a vision summary. Now, some vision statements from some organizations are nice little short, pithy phrases. Somebody told us, I believe, Honda's at one point was beat Benz. That's their vision for what they're after. We were not so succinct. Those of you that received Holden newsletters may have noticed, when did it come out? It was a spring issue of the newspaper. was a draft of something entitled A Vision for Holden. I will just quickly read it to you. I'll also say that it's listed at the far end of the timeline. There's a section of the timeline on the east wall that has the vision and some comments about that. When we put this together, we found that we also started by identifying some key values that have grown during the last 40 years, because we found that the process of looking forward for the village has not only happened at the board level, but that there has in the 40 years been a lot of community involvement. And we needed to acknowledge the community's input in that as well. A vision for Holden. For 40 years, the wider Holden community has changed and grown. Together, we have welcomed new villagers, shaped an understanding of our distinctive life together, and looked in hope to the future. During those 40 years, villagers have experienced a version of life together in the wilderness. We leave behind certain habits and conveniences. We limit our exposure to media and communication devices. We minimize negative human impact on our surroundings. When we come into the wilderness, we commit to some degree of cultural and physical fasting in order to see with greater clarity ourselves, our needs, our neighbors, the world, and the mystery of God's abundance. At Holden, we cherish imagination and creativity. We allow for mistakes and uplift faithfulness, generosity, and forgiveness. We discuss important issues, reflect on our common practices, examine our choices, revise habits, advocate for justice, and reflect again. We acknowledge individual perspectives, but we work for common understanding. Every evening, we come together for worship. There, as we endeavor to be the one body of Christ in that place, we sing, pray, and receive the sacrament as one. And always we leave the wilderness renewed, refreshed, inspired, and better able to minister to the deep hungers of the world. The Holden community has gathered in the wilderness for 40 years. And as we continue through the next years of our common history, we do so with conviction and direction. To ensure a thriving community, we will welcome a new generation of villagers. We will make special efforts to fully include children and youth, believers and seekers, the established and the disenfranchised. We recognize the strength and vitality that comes with diversity, and we will work to widen the circle of those who come to Holden. Holden has been blessed with unique gifts, the people who gather, a facility that supports, and the wilderness that surrounds. And together we will work to see this place recognized as the base of a spiritual movement that exists for the sake of the church and the world. As we tend to Holden's future, we will walk gently on the earth and be careful in our use of resources and technology. We will be hospitable to all, especially to those who are marginalized elsewhere. We will be generous in mutual assistance and in community spirit, always practicing discernment, ever intergenerational. And each evening we will come together in Christ-centered worship as one body, a foretaste of the feast to come. There is not a lot in that statement that gets down to the nitty-gritty of day-to-day life. And in looking forward, we needed to be more concrete as well. I mentioned that we had started a year and a half ago with a vision process with a facilitator. Out of the list of priorities that resulted from that process, the staff at Holden took some of our listed priorities and came up with strategic goals that helped us more concretize the way that vision would live through the village. And Janet will continue talking about that.
My name is Janet Grant, and I serve Holden as co-director along with Diane Shiner. We started our term 2 years ago, And that just happened to coincide with this process that the board was experiencing, and we joined them in that process as well. We came home from that meeting with a task at hand, and the four of us, Diane and I as co-directors, our operations manager, Christopher, and our business manager, Molly, the four of us started at looking at those goals that were prioritized by the board, and as David said, took them, and it just happened that four strategies came forward for us. And so we each kind of worked diligently at each one, and then came together to work together on these together. It really was a collaborative effort for us, working hard individually, but then coming to the others to get feedback and to tweak one another's words and challenge one another. And it's been really a joy to work together very hard on this project. The strategy that, part of my responsibilities here in the village really have to do with our inside life here in the village. Diane and I kind of split things up, an inward and an outward sort of focus, and some of the things that I take responsibility for are right here in the village, and that includes program. And that is one of the primary strategies that we have of these four. A strategy, and I'm going to just read the words to you so I say it right. Offer challenging and practical resources for living faithfully. That's the strategy that we want to provide through our programming in the village. I want to add also that last fall, late summer and fall, we also went through a feasibility process, a study. Some of you, maybe several of you, were a part of that. And through that, our constituency told us that they want to be assured that Holden will continue to offer a fine program, not only now, but for those to come, whether they be family or friends or those people we encourage to come. And so that's really a strong basis for us, and lots of the things that we are thinking forward towards is what sort of program that continues to be cutting edge, challenging, growing edge, whatever the language you want to use, that Holden has been known for, and how can we continue to do that? So then under our strategy of offering practical and challenging resources, we have several subpoints that I want to talk a little bit about. Primarily, we want those resources to be transportable, that people can take them away from here, that people can come here and have wonderful worship, can be part of wonderful sessions here in this room, can be in conversations, can kind of live a life here in the village also, that they can take things away with them, take home. And primary amongst those then would be new worship resources. We also want to be a place where people can practice and take home resources of discernment. Holden has long been a place where people come in transition, come to be a place of in between. What am I going to do? How is God calling me now? Is God calling me now? All those sorts of questions. So the tools of discernment are things that we've kind of honed over the years here, but we have a lot of work to do with that. And so that's another area that we're hoping to move ahead on. I have a particular passion myself, an interest in how is this winter community that lives here, this smaller community, how are they a learning community together, and how can we creatively do that? We've had manifestations of that in the past, and those are gone. And what is next? What does the winter learning community look like in these times? And then finally, in our programmatic goals, is a goal of diversity. How do we become a community that challenges the church to be more diverse and be more diverse itself? So amongst all those things, I want to just say that our volunteers are one of our greatest assets. And so that is really a part of our program as well, to serve them, to care for them, to encourage them, to get them to come here and be a part of this place. Sabbaticals and retreats are another area that we hope that we can accomplish sorts of some of these goals, as well as serving young people. And when I say young people, that's a gamut of young people, I would think, from children up through young adults. Just as an example, next summer we intend to host a number of young people who Dorothy Bass is helping us shepherd to this place, who have been writers of a document, a book, that Dorothy has helped them produce on what does it mean, what are the practices of faith for our young people today. So those young folks will be coming next summer and to be a part of our community, to learn with us, to teach us, to inspire, we hope, others who have come here at the same time. Some of you who have children or young people here now might have noticed, I hope, some people are starting to notice that our Narnia and Minors curriculum are more integrated with one another as well as the whole summer theme, and we hope to expand that along the way to be inclusive of our young people. Then, as I said before, worship resources are important for us, that we can be seen as and provide for the church, and resources that are liturgical, musical, arts, that sorts of things. And included in that, in the arts area, is crafts. Ever since I've been here, which is 8 years now, evaluations every summer say I didn't get to do the craft I wanted to. I went to sign up, that was all filled up. There's no room down in the craft room. Those sorts of things. There's a real yearning these days for people to do something tangible, creative, something they can take, some sort of skill they can learn of creativity. Later this fall, we will be offering, and I'm sad to say it's full. I'm happy to say, actually, that it's full. Living Liturgy, where Tom Witt and Mary Price will be back, along with their colleagues, Marty Haugen, Dan Erlander, and Susan Briel, looking at liturgy and how is it living, how is it rooted, and how is it creative. And we have over 200 people signed up for that, and we hope that that will be a wonderful source of resource to the church, and we hope that, that we will find ways to continue it into the future. Sitting in the back row is our spiritual director in the village right now. Barbara is here, and she just arrived the other day. We started a pilot program last summer where we hosted a spiritual director to be here in the village, and that person consistently was very busy last summer. We invited one of them to come back through the winter occasionally to serve, to listen, to walk with, journey with our winter staff. Very much appreciated to have someone, a spiritual guide amongst us. And so this summer we too have someone lined up to be with us throughout the summer to help us in those steps towards discernment or just our walk with God in our lives, helping us understand the questions we have and move along through them. And then hospitality is also a part of our program, I consider to be part of the program, and that's where the diversity goal comes in. We are moving along with that in little steps, and that gets us to some of those bigger goals. 2 years ago, we welcomed a group that Ingrid helped us bring to the community, and they came again last year, and they come again this summer in August, a group of women who are recovering prostitutes from Chicago. Yeah, women who need renewal, need to be able to go to a place where they can just be refreshed and be who they are and be a part of the community. We 2 years ago had one group. Last year we had four groups. This year we expect six groups. Similar sorts of groups, from many of them from Seattle area, but again as far away as Chicago. People who wouldn't be able to come to Holden. That we can reach out to them and make it possible for them to be here and become a part of the community fully as community members. We also, this spring, many of you probably realize we offer youth weekends during May. And in May this year, we hosted 850 young people and their counselors through the month. And amongst them were 13 young people from an area called the Hilltop area in Tacoma. Were they all African American young people? I think, yeah, there wasn't an Asian in that group. 13 out of 850. It's a few. They were able to come because of scholarships we were able to offer them. Our goal is 50 in the next couple of years. We're hoping that we'll reach that goal. At least it would be wonderful if we would reach that goal next year, but I think realistically it might be a couple of years before we're able to provide that. We have in our budget the 50 scholarships for next year. We're hoping that we'll be able to use them, but if we don't, we'll just keep trying. So some steps are being made, and we need to make more. So
What are the size of those scholarships per unit?
It is a room and board, sort of, so they don't have to pay any anything to be here. Yeah.
Well, what would be your subsidized cost for a scholarship?
Our subsidized cost, well, Molly, do you want to say?
The equivalent charge from the village to that person coming in those May Youth Weekends would probably be about $100. That's not necessarily our cost. Actually, our cost is more than that. Registrations don't cover the cost of having a guest here, but in terms of what they would have paid us otherwise would have been about $100.
The women who come from Chicago, that they come for a week, so that our cost, what they would have been charged would be, what's a week?
$300.
About $300, and that, again, isn't our total cost, but that's what we would charge. Does that answer your question? So we're excited about lots of possibilities and moving ahead with those sorts of things. And to do that, Christopher's going to talk a little bit more about how some of the other things that have to happen, we hope to have happen to make those things possible.
One of the strategic goals of the village is sustaining our buildings and systems in good health. I'm going to talk a little bit about how the upcoming comprehensive campaign is going to help us do that. Approximately half the budget of the campaign is for capital improvements, and we've divided those into four parts. One part is safety, another is remodeling, construction and maintenance, third is utilities, and a fourth is we've grouped together as vehicles, equipment, and bridge. So I'm going to talk primarily about the remodeling projects that we have planned and some of the reasoning behind why we're choosing those particular remodels and what we intend to do. There was a group that met this winter called the Dream Team that strategized about the goals for the village, and together with the Holden Village management and hopefully some input from the greater Holden Village community has come up with the goals for these remodels. If you read the last Holden News, we tried to solicit from you, the greater Holden Village community, what you see as the needs are in the village as far as space use and facilities improvement. We have not received very much input, so tonight may be your chance, if you've been waiting, to give us some input.
Yeah. You said about half. How much money are you talking about there?
$3 million. And this is for 10 years worth of projects. There's five goals for our remodeling projects. The first one is to enhance program in the village. And that is enhancing program space and actually creating program space. Another is preservation. The village is old. The buildings need to be improved. The plumbing and the structure and windows and so forth need to be replaced. A third is energy. The buildings were built without insulation when diesel fuel was cheap. That's no longer the case. Each remodel will reduce our energy use of firewood and our diesel fuel, so we make better use of the resources that we have. Another is safety in the remodels. Each remodel is incorporating all of the modern life safety codes, which are now required. And that means improved or added sprinkler systems, fire-rated wall assemblies, which means basically fire blocking and sheetrock and 20-minute rated doors and so forth, so fire does not spread throughout the buildings quickly. new fire alarms, smoke detectors in every room, all the things that make buildings more safe for our guests and staff. And lastly is hospitality. Make our buildings less drafty, less mice, and better community spaces for the community, as well as making key places in the village accessible to those who with physical challenges, such as the first floor of Lodge 1. So we've taken those goals for our remodels, and we've put together a schedule of the large pieces. We have many, many projects planned as part of this comprehensive campaign, but I'll start by describing the big pieces which follow in a certain progression to achieve some of these goals. This next winter and this fall, we'll be finishing our projects under the last capital campaign. We'll be completing our sewer replacement project. We'll be rebuilding the diversion dam settling box structure, which supplies water to the village for fire protection, domestic uses, and hydroelectricity. And we'll be remodeling Lodge 6 and Chalet 6. And this is an opportunity for many of you that wish to come and help on those remodels. Well, that's an ambitious schedule, and we would appreciate any volunteers that would like to come for a couple of weeks or a couple of months to help with those projects. And then starting a year from now, a year from this month, the first big project of the new campaign is rebuilding Chalet 2. And Chalet 2 is our only opportunity at actually adding space to the village. We expect to get approval for this project from the Forest Service and the State Historical Office because it existed once before. And otherwise, it's very unlikely they would grant us permission to actually build a building. And the ultimate goal of replacing Chalet 2 is to create more programming space. However, Chalet 2 itself won't be programming space, but it will replace beds for the subsequent remodels, which will be adding programming space. So the next step in this progression is to remodel this building, Koinonia. We are proposing that we'll remodel the west wing, upper and lower floors, as well as the Koinonia addition basement where the craft room is now. And the goals for that remodel, first of all, to create additional programming space, to improve programming space like crafts. We hope to have a better lit, more natural light, more space for crafts, and a more usable basement in Koinonia. And then there are many other projects which are not scheduled necessarily yet. We are still working on that. And a lot of those decisions we need to make on an annual basis due to staff recruitment and due to the success of the campaign, as well as at what point the mine remediation will influence our priorities. But we hope to remodel the rest of the chalets, Chalet 5 and 8 through 14. Some of them to a higher degree and some to a lesser degree, depending upon whether we expect to use them in the winter. But all those chalets are unremodeled, uninsulated, and use a great deal of firewood. We want to remodel the basement of the hotel. The rest of the hotel has been remodeled, but not the basement. There's a lot of improvements to the systems of the hotel we can make, energy efficiency, as well as space. There's space down there that can be used more efficiently. When I was the head carpenter in 1981, Werner gave me a list of jobs, and one of the jobs on that list was to repair the rotten log corbels in all the buildings. I counted them. We had something over 350 of them in the village. And you know, after being here a year, I didn't get that done. When I came back 20 years later, they were still waiting to be redone, only they're a little bit more rotten now. So that's one of the projects for the campaign as well. In fact, on Wednesday, we have a log home contractor coming to the village to give us a bid on replacing those log ends. The metal roofs on many of the buildings with metal roofs will be replaced. We want to build a contemplative space, sometimes called a postinia, a place in the village that's available for no other purpose but to go there to be quiet, to pray for small worship services. And we want to enhance the Narnia playfield, a place that once people played volleyball and now has a lot of construction rubble in it and will through this season as we complete our drain field. And as that project is completed and we clean that up, we'd like to create a basketball court on this level of the village, along with horseshoes and volleyball and a picnic area and some grass, so that families and villagers can make use of a flat area in the village to use. And there's a number of other projects. I'll wait and see what kind of questions you have without taking any more time right now, but we can talk about the utility projects, the safety projects, the equipment projects, as well as the remodels if you have questions.
Are there questions now?
Diane, do you want to have them afterward, or maybe?
Or is Molly going yet?
Maybe we should complete it and then come back.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. There are a couple more strategies that we've been working on within our vision statement. But rather than go further into those, I think those are two key elements. I want to talk about one piece of the other two strategies. One of them has to do with the financial stability of the village. As we look to the future, as David said in his vision statement, and as we look to these kinds of expenditures, both in programming and in capital improvements, obviously one question is the money piece of it. And within that piece, Holden has a vehicle in place that not very many people are aware of. So I thought I'd take a few minutes to kind of raise your awareness about this. Back in 1995, Holden created, or the board created, a separate entity called the Holden Village Foundation, which didn't have any funds in it until sometime in 2000, I think, were the first donations to it. As of now, 10 different donors have made contributions to the foundation, and along with other funds that have been endowed to the village that aren't necessarily in the foundation, but the total money that we are aware of that's endowed to the village is $340,000. At 5% interest, that might create $15,000 in income to the village in a year, which wouldn't go very far towards these projects that we've talked about. So our vision is to increase the endowments for the village by about $2 million over the next several years in both foundation cash gifts and known plan gifts to the village. That $2 million, additional $2 million, would create another $100,000 in revenue to the village, or funds that could be used by the village. And ultimately, it may be an even higher number that we'll be shooting for in that endowment. When we talk about those kinds of funds, I want to put that in perspective of the funds that we expend currently, or the funds that we receive currently. One is our guest registration income. It's about $1 million a year. We also receive a very important in-kind donation, and that's our volunteer labor. The staff who work here, the people who were here for work camp these last 2 weeks, bring a donation to the village that isn't a check written out, but has a definite value. And in our audit process last year, the auditor valued a piece of that labor at $470,000. If we look at all of the labor, not just the piece that the audit's allowed to recognize, but all of our volunteer labor last year was about $1.3 million. That's a huge amount of money if the village ever had to go and replace that in terms of paying cash for the services. Hopefully that won't be the case. And then finally, donations, annual and capital donations of $480,000. those are large sums of money that the village relies on. An endowment would have several purposes to the village, or does have several purposes to the village, one of which is to help sustain the village in times when those other resources may not be available. For a time, looking forward into this summer, we had some real concern that our registrations were going to be down significantly to the tune of about $100,000. And likewise, work camp, simply having 2 weeks in June in the village with all staff and no paying guests, reduced our income for that period by $40,000. So an endowment that might generate $100,000 or more to the village definitely has uses, such as work camp, such as subsidizing lost registrations, or years that perhaps volunteers can't come to help on important projects and we have to hire services. You know, as much as we try, and with the registrations, we did a lot of work to try to reduce that lost registration income. But with all of those, still lean years. There are still times that an endowment and funds from an endowment will help the village to continue operating smoothly from year to year. Another reason for the endowment, besides just having that source of funds, is actually in response to the supporters of Holden Village, many of whom are now looking at a point in their lives where they want to create a legacy or want to make a substantial gift to the village. And it would be difficult for us if someone were to suddenly leave $500,000 to the village and that lands in our budget. We need to spend it or have a huge windfall show up in that 1 year that doesn't then offset so easily future years. Whereas if that money can be put into an endowment fund, then the income from that will sustain the village and support the village for many years without having a large immediate impact, but having an important long-term impact. And again, gives that donor a feeling of leaving a legacy to the village. And likewise, a donor who wants to endow a specific program. They have a sum of money, they want a program to be supported. Putting the money into the Holden Foundation then allows a sum of money to come out of that year by year to support the program, whether it's enhancing outreach to groups to come to the village, maybe supporting our medical aid station is one idea we've had. A lot of different programs in the village are important to particular donors, and the endowment then lets them support that over a number of years. Finally, I want to talk about the vehicles that are available for planned giving. I've talked about the Holden Foundation, that you can make gifts, donors can make gifts directly to the Holden Foundation, but there are other ways as well. One is a bequest at death through your will. Another is through life insurance, naming Holden as a beneficiary of life insurance or retirement plan, charitable trusts that have various arrangements for the provision of either the income or the asset to go to the village, and charitable gift annuities. All of these enhance the future of Holden Village and enable donors to make gifts in that way. And I'll acknowledge easily that not every donor is interested in creating an endowment for the village. They want to support the immediate programming that's going on now, the immediate capital campaign, and that's great. What we've tried to do here, though, is to create the vehicle for those people who do want to give in this manner, who do want to make a legacy gift to the village that will support it over the years to come.
And I'm going to be brief just to express the vehicle that has developed behind, you know, as the culmination of all of this other effort. Those of you who were here on Friday evening heard Ann Niedringhaus right there in the context of our 40th anniversary celebration, set the desire that the work camp was intended to sort of go back to the spirit of the forerunners, who were so oriented toward making this place be a retreat center, making it available, improving, cleaning, all those things for the future. The idea is that we have, with this anniversary celebration, been trying once again to be oriented to the future. One of the things that we found out as we went around with the vision statement and getting feedback is that many, many people say, please don't change. It reminds me of that song, you know, stay as sweet as you are, don't let a thing ever change you. For many people who have an incredible transforming experience here for themselves, someone they love, or meeting someone they love here in the village, which has happened, that they are wanting to treasure that and carry it forward. So a lot of looking to the future has to do with brushing off and renewing what were some of the founding values and spirit. When we started our 40th anniversary discussions, we had a meeting at what was then, I think, Lutheran Bible Institute in Issaquah of a number of people who have been involved with the village over the years and asked how should we celebrate it. At that time, Elmer Witt that was the last time that I saw Elmer, was at that meeting. It was shortly before he went in to have surgery, which then resulted in the complications that led to his death on Christmas Eve. Elmer was probably toward the end of this table of conversation. And those of you who know that Elmer was not only the director here at one time, but was really part of the original kind of founding visionaries that imagined what this place should become. And so as we got around to Elmer, and we'd have a lot of nostalgia about the good old days and so on, and when it came to Elmer, he said, I'm tired of talking about the past. If we sat around and talked about the past when we were starting this place, nothing ever would have happened. You know, well, let's talk about where are we going and how are we going to get there and how can we support that kind of renewal of spirit. And so even as we are clarifying the treasures to bring forward, work camp demonstrated, I think, this forward-looking, full-hearted spirit sort of, it's hard to describe because work camp exceeded all of our expectations. It was not just about buildings and cleaning up. As it was 40 years ago, it was very much about conversation, study, worship, the renewal of the heart, that I think many people left feeling sort of recharged for their own ministries at home. All of those conversations about looking forward led to the title of this campaign that was announced at the 40th anniversary celebration, which is From Generation to Generation, taking the biblical concept of how do we pass on the things that we have learned from our forefathers and our foremothers that we're called to in terms of living as living renewed, which is our mission. The campaign, there are brochures that I'll put out that anyone is welcome to take. We are not here to, you know, lock the door and hit you all up for money this evening. That is not the case. But there is information that's out on the bulletin board. But each component of this campaign that we are doing starts with the vision that David was talking about. It talks about the programmatic enhancements, but also its maintenance. Right now, it costs that supplementary figure that Molly was talking about. We supplement our fees about $200,000 a year just to keep these fees affordable. I don't know if you sort of went only $100 for someone for a weekend when you consider that everything has to come up that barge you know, from nails to milk. Obviously, it would be much higher price if we were trying to pass that on all the time to those who come here. So we need a certain amount of maintenance money that's embodied in this campaign, as well as those additional funds to be directed very much toward the diversity that is a shared and developed goal for some time in terms of wanting to include people who couldn't usually have this experience. The capital needs, although they sound, for Holden, fairly breathtaking in terms of $3 million, those of you who I know are involved in capital campaigns elsewhere, in your own congregations or hospitals or other organizations, to me, one of the most amazing things here is the amount of capital projects that are done through volunteer labor. Our per square foot cost here is astonishingly low because the vast majority of it is carried through volunteers who love this place and invest sometimes both dollars and time, but certainly a great deal of time. The dollars that go behind the use of that time are vital. We couldn't have had Work Camp if the preceding campaign from 1995, Sustaining the Gift, was very successful. It exceeded its goal. And because it exceeded its goal, we got to be very creative with this idea of Work Camp, in which we got, Molly was estimating, about $100,000 worth of work done if you give credit to all of the hours of labor that took place during that time. We're now safer, cleaner, refurbished in a number of areas because of those 2 weeks. That was enabled because we could buy the paint and the lumber and all those other parts that were done through that campaign. But on an average basis, our capital needs have been about $300,000 a year, and even though Christopher has a very detailed list here with the projected cost for each project. If you simply take that ballpark figure and multiply it by 10, then you know how we came with that $3 million. I want to say that by way of, if there's anybody in the room, that when you look at the overall goal for the campaign, which is $6.3 million, and your reaction is, you know, so what are we doing? Are we going to keep the jacuzzi open all winter? You know, are we going to, there are some people who would really like to get rid of these chairs because some people think they're uncomfortable. Sorry, we are not getting rid of these chairs. We're going to sit here uncomfortably for the next 40 years. But we're not talking about some change in the commitment that we have to simple living. We are wanting to ensure that what we do is of quality and long-lasting so that things are not needing to be replaced in a few years because they were not done correctly in the first place. And that's embodied in this part. Molly's already explained the endowment piece as an option for those that really want to see some long-range sustenance. Our hope is that this might allow us to, it's a 5-year pledge, so that we might not need to have another campaign for 7 to 10 years if we are in fact successful with this one. There's some detail here. There's more detail available. There's lots of information available that you can see any one of us about this. Or how about all the board members raising your hands? These are experts now. The committee also, maybe put your hand up if you're on the committee that's working on this. Yeah, up, up, up. These are all people who would be happy to answer any questions. I think that one of the things that I would like to comment on in conclusion is that in fact, Janet has usually said this when she started out. A lot of our ability to be moving forward with such optimism and heart and enthusiasm is coming from the collegiality that is around this table, not only among staff but with our board, all the forms of leadership of the village. We are in a kind of a solid and we're on a roll, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah, there's a great deal of positive momentum right now that we should build on for the future. So we're hoping that you are going to be interested in helping us, but we'll stop now so that you can give us some feedback, your suggestions, questions about this process.
Two things, one practical and near term, and the other more long term. When within our family we're talking to people about a holding, one of the things I like about Black Miss Laura when she's talking to people about sitting in the jacuzzi watching the wonderment of the sky and the mountain and the distance. And I would want something in there that makes the operation of the jacuzzi bulletproof so I don't come up here on the boat wondering, oh my God, is the jacuzzi going to be running? Now, from the standpoint of funding, think that you just went on a hike. You went up the Cloudy Pass and back in the day, and it's 95 degrees, okay? But you had a magnificent hike. Now, pretend just for a minute the jacuzzi there is, it's operating just beautifully, okay? And your body is yelling at you because you were stupid and you did that, right? Now, if they said, I'm sorry, it costs $100 to get in the jacuzzi, I don't know about you, but I'd go find $100 somewhere. So I think that there are enough people that are dedicated to the jacuzzi functioning in a bulletproof way that would generate just tons of money. Because everybody would say, yeah, put me down for the jacuzzi. The other one is, in December of this year, our daughter Cindy is going to make Laura and I grandparents. And I was thinking earlier that I want Holden to be here for that child to be able to do volunteer work here. But I got to thinking a little bit further and said, no, that's not quite right. In the spirit of Black Elk, Lakota Sioux, I want it here for the seventh generation. And there are two things that I want. I want it to be unchanged, and I want it to be ever-changing. The part that I want to be unchanged is that Holden is always pushing the envelope within our Judeo-Christian heritage of what our church and our church leaders are doing in the community and in the world and in the environment. Now, what that's going to be like in 5 and 6 and 7 generations, I don't know. But I want Holden to be the place where those people who feel they're on a fringe can come and be welcome, can be nurtured, can teach, so that the next generation can go out and make a difference. That's my vision and what I want to have happen. So, take care of it, would you, Christopher?
Did you know that last summer we replaced the boiler, the filtration system, the chemical feed system, and the circulating pump system?
What I know is that this summer, anytime I wanted it, it was there, and I haven't heard of it being down, which is a good thing.
It hasn't broken down since we replaced it.
And when we've done that 10 years in a row, then I'll start to feel more comfortable.
We needed an endowed chair for
if you like the jacuzzi, meet me afterwards. We'll talk money.
Somebody else had a hand up over here.
Yeah, several of you mentioned increased program space, rebuilding Lodge 2 to increase programs. I'd just like you to speak a little bit more to that. Somebody.
Chalet 2 would be built in order to replace beds that would be lost in Koinonia in order to create Koinonia being all program. So that's part of your question, I think. And what would that programming space be used
like,
for?
So like in the future of Koinonia would take all of the beds that are up here out.
Right.
Okay, that... And that space then would become available for
program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that answers my question.
A little girl by the name of Allison brought the movie Harry Potter up here. She's 7 years old because she wanted to share that with children in the community and maybe some older children in the community. And I was asked, could we do that? And we checked. And we couldn't find a two-hour slot in here to do that for her to be able to share this wonderful gift unless we started at 6 o'clock in the morning or 10 o'clock at night, and the people that should be watching that movie should be in bed at that time. That's one of the things that's not happening.
Barb, I think you had your hand up.
Well, that's actually helpful to hear, because I guess my question was, I really appreciate your emphasis on an enhancing program. I would really support that. Tonight we ran out of chairs in the Village Center. I mean, the more we can do to make people's, I think new chairs, although you're using it facetiously, not getting rid of these, but just simply getting more so everyone has a place to sit would be great.
More old chairs.
But I guess my question was, I'm not sure enhancing program means increasing program space. I'm not sure I agree with you, Art. I guess because as I think of guest experience, and I want to be convinced, but things like the Lens Conference 2 years ago that I spoke at, so I got my own room. I'll never forget when Elmer Witt and Dan Erlander went into one of the rooms in Koinonia to share a room, and then they got two more roommates. And I think Living Liturgy is probably going to be like that too, where adults are forced to bunk three or four to a room. I think, I don't know, I'd like us to do surveys of guests to find out if we really want to lose sleeping rooms, even if it keeps the same number of beds, or wouldn't they rather have more rooms and not be crunched in so much? I guess that's my question. I really believe in enhancing program. I'm just not sure that that equals necessarily program space. And I'd like to hear the argument for how that means, how that enhances guests' experience. I see the crafts one. I really can see the Library Crafts Exchange. But losing the Koinonia sleeping rooms makes me really sad.
I think the example that Art gave is like the one with the little girl, but I can't tell you how many times there's the issue of, well, if the bulk mailing is in there, then we can't have that session, so, or the group that wants to have an ad hoc discussion, or just to discuss an area of, not conflict between Janet and I, but it's called, we would like to have a place to meet with somebody. And I open the door, and Janet's in there with two people that she's meeting with, and so then I go over to the children's library and sit on the floor with a couple of other people. I mean, we do not have hardly any space in which, say, a small group can meet to discuss something or to do a group spiritual direction kind of thing. We have very little flexibility in terms, both winter and summer, to add things, and we're always kind of doing this juggling thing. There was an extensive conversation in the village where people said, totally, what do you think the village needs? And certainly, do we need more beds, was one of the issues. And I would say, and I'm going to bring it out tomorrow, but I would say two-thirds of that list was Kristen saying, I need better light to create and to teach art, which is one of the values from the, you know, origin in terms of art, space for artists to work. There were just all kinds of things that right now either don't happen or have to happen in extremely complicated ways because the space is simply not there.
I'd like to add that the goal is not to lose beds.
No, I'm not arguing against it's rooms, I guess. That maybe the guests that are four to a room would say it would be more worthwhile. It's a trade-off, obviously. That would just be the question. I think the same number of beds, but maybe more rooms. I don't know.
So if you rebuild Chalet 2, similar to what it was, only all bed spaces, or you just have to use a footprint, or what's the...
The hope would be to build it larger than it originally was, to build it more on the scale of Chalet 1 and 3.
Okay. Okay. And that's because it was a pre-existing, that might be possible. You're not limited. Well, the footprint isn't even there anymore.
It's still there.
Is it? Okay.
But we're apparently not limited to the footprint in that they have indicated if it's in the style that fits with the surrounding chalets, that would be a greater concern than the square feet.
Yeah, and since both one is right.
Also, you wouldn't be building it as a house.
Yes.
As a home. I mean, would you have a kitchen?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And common space.
It would be like Chalet 1 and 3, which are like the Waltons' house, maybe. Lots of bedrooms.
Darlene?
I guess I'll have to concur that with Barb that in the idea of more beds, I certainly know that the pastors in my area complain about all the quadruple bunking for the lens. And I say to them, well, that's not a Holden's issue, that's the lens conference. If they want to send that many people, that's what you're going to get. But the other concern I have and have heard from other people is the switch of library and crafts. And you keep talking about how you need better light for crafts, but you also need good light for a library. And you need very controlled an environment as possible for books. And which program do you want to have people seeing as soon as they come into the village? Do we want to be turning this into a craft guild area, or do we want people to really know that this is a place they can use resources? So
you're assuming something that we haven't said tonight. Where these places would be in this building?
Oh, I guess, well, Barb mentioned the switch, and I've seen that in the report to the board, so that's what I was referring to.
But, you know, that is definitely a possibility that we were considering, is switching those two spaces. And we can talk more about why.
I'll just bring it up because I heard Barb say it, and I know that that's something that the report said.
You mean putting the library downstairs?
Yes. And creating this wing for crafts and upstairs for program space.
There would be a radiant heating system in the basement, similar to what we have in our garage, so that the heat would be maintained and dry. And I guess one of the issues has to do with natural lighting versus artificial lighting, and how much is that needed for reading, when much of the reading that goes on around here is probably in the evening. And we also are finding more and more, and I can assure you, up in the administrative area, the people are needing computers, either because they're writing a paper, if we're going to have people come here for sabbaticals, that we need to have some corrals, you know, in an area that would allow guests as well as staff to be able to work on papers, writing worship services. I mean, right now people are lined up three deep upstairs sometimes to use a computer, and we need to spread out some of those areas.
And speaking as a volunteer in the library, it's impossible to work in there. There's no room.
Yeah.
So we could talk quite a bit about what should go where, but the point, I mean, the bottom line here is to create more programming space, mm-hmm. and maybe we should talk about that first. Making
yeah.
all
programming. Yeah.
Okay.
Ingrid.
All of these things sound wonderful, and of course we'd like to have an endless amount of resources and space, but we don't. I don't understand what you mean by more program space. It sounds to me like you're talking about more administrative space, which is good. I mean, you could take a couple of bedrooms and add offices or whatever, but
no,
speaking as somebody who's run the program in the summer a couple of three times, we don't need more program space except during board week. Board week is the only time when we run out of space. You could use the stage to make, say, a weaving area in the VC. The stage in the VC is always wasted space. I mean, there's wasted space around here. There's already a postinia in there that nobody ever uses.
Because it's too noisy.
But I don't, I mean, I just don't understand. I think we need bedrooms, and we need, I mean, we need the chalets, the summer staff, summer faculty come to are, you know, I've been coming for 25 years, and they've been going downhill that whole time. You know, this week we've had 11 people in one bathroom, and the shower didn't work. So it seems to me that there's some issues about those chalets, too. But I mainly think that small rooms, I think people like would like to come here, especially if they could stay in their own private little room, and it, there could be a lot of small rooms. So I think giving up bedrooms seems not like a good idea. And I just don't see what this program, how this, I mean, I think we have enough space as a program. We're okay. We can be creative. I mean, I taught in BC today. It was fine.
Can I just clarify that the intent is not a more administrative space. It is a studio space. It is a tape ministry space. It's a meeting space. It's not more offices.
I wondered also, well, we have tape ministry space already, but I wondered also if the basement of Chalet 2 could be more craft space.
Two questions and a comment. The role of the park board here, the National Park Board, you need a continuing renewal of lease, as I understand it. Are these long-term leases, or are you in the position that you have to meet certain standards almost annually before you could have a problem with your lease?
We have a 20-year lease, which was renewed.
It goes until 2017 with a... Yeah. Special use permit with the Forest Service.
Okay. And the second, with respect to the mine here, which is, I guess, what you own, the park board owns, the claim, whatever it is, I'm not sure this is my first time here, but do you have any liability potential that relates to all that's up there in the way of leaching or anything, or is that just completely clear of your operation here?
Somewhere in between. And I'll try, and Jim, you correct me if I'm wrong. Our village attorney is sitting right behind you, so he'll. The village, Holden Village, does not own this property that this building is on. We own these buildings, but not this property. We own property up by the entrance to the mine and where the garage is and the portal, the original claims are. The mine remediation project that has been ongoing for a number of years, the primary financial responsibility for that goes to Intalco, which is the successor company to the House Hound Mining Company. It's a big conglomerate that will be footing the bill. Because we are in this place, because our garage is up there where much of the contamination is coming from, we are listed as a PRP. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Potentially responsible party. When the mine remediation project was beginning, we had to negotiate an access agreement that allowed the engineering firm to go up and do their investigation up there. Jim helped negotiate that access agreement, and in that it says that we should have no significant financial responsibility for the cleanup. We did not create the mess. We are not responsible for cleaning it up. That has been the position that everybody has taken thus far. The Forest Service agrees with that. We may, in fact, suffer some disruption to programming for a season or two. We may be asked to provide some beds for workers or some in-kind contribution like that. The Intalco's lawyers have looked and have discovered that we don't have deep pockets, that considering the cost, what this cleanup is going to cost, the financial contribution that could come from our resources would be, you know, a very small percentage. So
we don't consider ourselves financially liable.
So if the EPA had some standard that was being violated, it's this other organization that would...
Right.
Yeah, and that was...
In other words, if, you know, we're competing with people doing something else during their time off, isn't enhancing guest facilities probably going to be a little bit more of a drawing card?
Mm-hmm. It could be, except if we listen to the feedback that we got in those visioning kinds of sessions, it's clear that the reason that people come isn't because they have a bathroom in their room or, you know, it's or the bed or whatever. It's because of the speakers, it's because of the quality of worship, it's because of the library or because they made a basket or because their kids had a great time in Narnia. Most of the drivers in terms of why do people come back here and bring their friends has to do with the multifaceted aspects of program, not just teaching sessions, but all aspects of programming that nurture people. And so they'll put up with the bathroom down the hall and all those other kinds of things. It doesn't seem, we didn't hear people saying, every great once in a while there's somebody who doesn't want to come back because the facilities are too rustic. But that's not often ever the case.
But at this particular point, most of those people probably expect that.
Mm-hmm. Ingrid.
I wonder if you could give me some kind of a financial breakdown on how much of the space is enhancing life for the residents in the winter community financially and in terms of what we're talking about doing, and how much of it is to enhance life for people here in the summer. I heard you say you're going to remodel one of the chalets.
Oh, sure.
Several chalets. You're going to, but one of them right away, like...
Rebuilt Chalet 2 was rebuilt.
So it sounds like there's a fair amount of stuff that's happening which will make it more pleasant for people living here in the winter.
Year round.
And then, so I'm sort of wondering about the financial breakdown between making it good for the winter community or the year round community and making it enhancing summer offerings.
Yeah. I could start off with that. The chalets are used in the summer more than the winter. And the primary purpose for remodeling them is not to make it more pleasant. I mean, that's perhaps part of it. It's to preserve them. They need new plumbing. They need new roofs. They need new wiring. It's to make them more energy efficient. It's to make them safer. And they will be more comfortable as well. But that's not the driving reason. The summer chalets, which are often used for teaching staff, are also in the budget to be remodeled.
I think I know where you're going. And one of the things I always try to drum into our winter community is that the winter community exists for the sake of the summer community. We wouldn't be here in the winter if it wasn't for all those who came in the summer. And part of what we do in the winter is to build a community that then is hospitable and welcoming. And is able to receive those who come in the summer. So that's a part of it, too. It's not, and I'll just add on to Christopher's things, it isn't, the primary goal is saving fuel and being good stewards of the place and to make them safe.
So there isn't a sort of financial balance of those things.
Well, I have to be awfully
hard
to.
Yeah, how you could do that.
Because there is such a mix in terms of the fuel efficiency being part of it. And I think
are there new community rooms in Agape and in Lodge 1 maybe?
Yes, common area.
Common rooms. Are they used commonly?
Yes. And Agape was this last year, the first year it had residents in it. Lodge 1 has just opened with that.
So could we use them for, or could anybody use them for a discussion group or a small group meeting or something? Are they available?
Depends on the people living there. At this last year, the people that live in Agape have, that's their living room. So if, like, I invite people into my living room in Chalet 13 for meetings and that sort of thing, if they invite them in, then they're used for that too. Or if, and often people ask if they can use something, use it for that sort of thing.
So they're really not common rooms for the larger community, right, but they're for that residents.
For the residents that live there.
Although they get used for a variety of ways. I had a meeting in Agape's common room every day during work camp. And
well, we've always been able to ask to use, right, for a right. teaching, use a living room in Shelley 1 or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's a different category than the Creekside room.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has there been any thought to using two bedrooms up here to solve the immediate problem with needing more computer space or meeting space?
This dream team that Christopher referred to, it's interesting as different ideas have come up when you were talking about Below Lodge 2. The committee that was established came from a variety of people in the village. And I remember Molly's husband, Harry, had decided at one point that beneath Lodge 2, we could have the equivalent of the mine shaft in the B&B, and they would be the cheaper rooms, sort of bunks under the thing. Practically every idea that has been coming up here, how near should programmatic space be to other kinds of space that has to do with being quiet, the desire to have informal places in which to meet and talk and be relaxed was a common observation. The guests look for that, staff look for that without being incredibly disruptive to lots of other people. So definitely that was talked about. We did not, believe me, this plan is not where we started. At one time, the upper part of Lodge 6 was going to be the extended programmatic space that was being identified. And it evolved to believing that there'd be a variety of efficiencies around having a space, a building dedicated to program.
Then the final thing I want to say about program is that I have to say the consequence of bringing Genesis House women here, which is so wonderful, and they love it, and they go home and they don't forget, and it stays alive in their hearts, and they talk about it, and at their graduations, at the end of the year, when they finish their time in Genesis House, they all tearfully give thanks to Holden Village, but they want to come back, and they want to have a long-term relationship with Holden, and they want to bring their children. And I think that's what I want. I come here because I see my old friends, and we renew, and we're touchstones for each other, and we have longitudinal. It's longitudinal. And my children come here, and so they say to me, these poor women who work minimum wage jobs but have two or three or four kids, they want to bring their children to Holden, and they want to come back, and they want to meet these people again. So I'm really starting to feel guilty every time I go over to Genesis House because there are all these people that want to come back. And Linda Haugen, Marty Haugen's wife, has given $300 to support somebody coming back. And so now I'm going to match that. So there's a little bit of stuff around people coming back, but we have an obligation when we start to bring other communities of people here that I didn't think about ahead of time. Mm-hmm. But that obligation has to do with the same expectations of those families as we have for ourselves.
And that is a real key thing in the campaign. Because I think we have to have that kind of commitment of making it possible in order to achieve any kind of diversity expansion. It's a long-term commitment, and it's putting funds that. Yeah.
That's
the
one question that I've always sort of wondered about, which is, has Holden, I assume, has thought about and decided not to, for various reasons, go to a sliding fee scale?
No, actually, one of the strategies that David was referring to in the beginning of this kind of strategic plan, one of them had to do with the finding new and creative ways to make this place affordable. And one of the items in it was to explore a sliding fee. We did consult with a number of other camps that have had experience with sliding fees, other organizations, and in general, the conclusion that we came to after examining it, that the difficulty of administering it was such a headache that it was better to put the energy toward increasing our line item around outreach and scholarship support and doing things to advertise that. If you got the last Holden News, we said, these are all the ways there's financial support for coming to Holden. If you know someone or if your congregation or whatever, is to really promote that. Maybe in the past it's been there and people haven't known. And so that's the vehicle that we're using to try and accomplish something like that.
And I assume that we're not the only family who does this, but knowing, you know, the fact that it's made clear that it's subsidized, I mean, we're more than happy to, you know, give the additional money and get tax deductions for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so making that clear, is incentive, you know, for people who could afford to hire to pay just the sliding fees and Gale to do it. But I've always sort of thought, I wonder why they don't do that.
What is your capacity for the summer here? How many guests can you have? And what's your operating rate for this year?
The total beds is 435.
435.
That includes staff.
Yeah, and that's if every four-bedroom room has four people in it, and every
double bed
has three people, and every double bed has two people in it. So we rarely actually hit that 435. But if we get up close to that 400.
How are you booked for this year?
We're booked pretty well through the first part of August. And then for reasons beyond our ability to discern, on August 10th, everybody leaves. and don't come back. We've made some efforts. That was the piece that I referred to earlier, that we looked up to the summer a few months ago and saw that actually at that point it was mid-July through August, our count was down substantially. It looked like we'd have about a $100,000 shortfall. And we began advertising because it used to be that if you didn't have your reservation into Holden on January 1st, you were out of luck.
Right.
And we were concerned that people who might then later consider coming would just automatically think, well, I can't get in. So now there was an advertisement in our newspaper, and on our website there's a listing that says these dates are still available for the summer, and that's been very effective. We've gotten that shortfall down to about $50,000 now.
Other questions? Comments?
I know that we've probably overspent our time, but I was hoping that maybe some people would express some kind of vision for what Holden will look like in another 20 years, let's say. What kind of vision do you have for... I mean, we've kind of gotten bogged down in the space program versus beds issue. And do any of you have a vision of what Holden might look like in 20 years in terms of who's here and what's going on here? Yeah,
I think it's time for Holden to, if I can take us out of this, out of the village, and what happens outside, living liturgy, for instance, let me just start there. It started here, and they'll have another event here. But outside, they had one in Minneapolis, I think it was, and one in California, and one in Texas.
Portland.
And in Portland, okay. That's going outside. That is something that I think.
And that's something that had its seeds at Holden.
Pardon?
That's something that had its seed at Holden, had its.
Yeah, that's something. That's, I think that's going to be an essential key to the future. One of the things is to go outside. It's pretty minimal. It's pretty minimal in terms of people bringing them in here. It's pretty well set in terms of the number that's going to come. 435 pillows. That's about it. You know. When it comes to discernment, I think we need to ask: do people have to come here for discerning, or can there be three people out in the country on behalf of Holden who would help people discern? One more thing. But that's, Holden Circle meetings. Mm-hmm. I think we need to, I've been in on planning half a dozen of those, and I think we need to take a new, kind of a new cut at that. We usually order soup that matches the carpet in the fellowship hall of the church for the meeting. So maybe there'd be a new way to go about that. We always end with Holden evening prayer. Well, if we're talking new liturgies, then it's time for a new liturgy to be taught at a Holden evening circle. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things outside.
Yep.
I think that would be a dream that I'd hold out for us.
Have you tried the matching? You know, years ago when you needed something new, somebody would suggest, we're in desperate need for this. I'll give $100 and I'll double it if somebody matches it. This is the way we got the panels up here. And so in 15 minutes, we had $15. Well, we try this at home, it works again. You know, if there's a desperate need for that, don't bring the world up here. We're up here to think new ideas. So I don't think we have to think about how deluxe this is going to be. You know, don't bring all that world with you. We want to get away from it a while and sort your priorities. What's important? What are we living for? Power, greed, money, comfort, or what? I think Holden gives you a chance to look all of that and say, I don't need all this. Let's share it. And I think we can do this thing by double matching. Try this over and over again. It works. We did this in supporting a missionary after we'd been here. Say we're short of funds. We went back home and say, I'll give $100 to give this missionary. And in just minutes, we had enough to cover her expenses there. I think it works everywhere. Without bringing all that up here, you know, let's keep holding simple and back away from the world for a while. What are our parameters? What are we interested in? Is it things, power, greed, money, or what? So, talking about bringing more up here for comfort, is it necessarily what Holden's all about? He lives simply, and that's part of the books too, more with less. And the less you have, the more creative you are. And that's happened since the beginning. We didn't have it, we were creative, and we made do. We sat on boards with boxes underneath to begin with, or on the floor. Gradually we had a little more, but we didn't have to make it fancy. And that was part of the delight of the community here, was that we all lived simply. I don't know what you want to do with that. But I'm not thinking just of the past, but I know it works elsewhere.
I think you're expressing what we are hoping also, is that the plans that are embodied here are not about getting fancy. Hopefully they are about better stewardship of the earth. It's one thing to be in teaching sessions talking about conservation and then letting our fuel and heat and everything, safety issues, be ignored, or burning up the forest, you know, in the winter because the heat's going out the windows. So, I mean, hopefully we are living simply, but maybe trying to improve the stewardship aspect of the earth's resources is a big part of what this is about.
I remember that when I was here with Elmer was here, and there were complaints, kids were complaining because they wanted to live in separate houses. You know, we didn't have fuel for all that. If you want to live like that, you might have to go elsewhere. You know, this is what we've got, and we've got to make do with it. That's what we want.
Can I just make a quick question? Rather than a sliding scale, a quick way that might be helpful would be like some arts group do, you know, like let's say suggested contribution. Your tickets are $42, but the real cost would, you know, bring it up to such and such. Mm-hmm. You could either put that real cost in per room per night, or you could say suggested additional mm-hmm. contribution. Mm-hmm. And then if people can't afford it, they could just mm-hmm. assume that that was the cost.
We do a little bit of that when we give non-paying rooms away. Like we'll invite clergy and church staff and what we call partners in ministry to come in our off-peak season, and we suggest to them what the cost of the food is while they're here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the rooms here, they might be empty anyways, but the food is expensive. So, you know, we do a little bit of it in that way. And I know that some I don't know how many people did it from work camp, but I know some did, mm-hmm. made sure. a donation for food because we suggested this is how much it costs yeah, daily.
And it's hard to get people motivated to add that extra money in, but it is when they're giving a check anyway, and it says here suggested contribution, rather than trying to remember, yeah, I want to give something to hold on, I can just add it in right there.
Well, this has gone quite long. We're well after 10 o'clock. Thank you for all your input on this. And if you have further questions or comments, just remember the people that had their hands up, the board members, and feel free. Oh, we should introduce Ann Cassidy, who's, you want to raise your hand? Talk to Ann, who's our fund developer for the village. Happy to have her with us. So. Thank you, everyone.
And thank you for being such articulate and considered advocate for this vision of how it's not moving.